This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome back. It's an episode of the Cooler Jets Podcast. Rio's Ben Blessington and Michael Nania. Michael, we've been away for a couple weeks, but we're back now, and we got a ton to talk about. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Just trying my best to get through another meaningless end to a Jets season in terms of playoff contention, but I don't think it's truly meaningless. I think there's still a lot of important things for us to evaluate, and I think there's a lot of positive stuff going on too, which, of course, we always like to focus on. So I think there's still a lot for us to pay attention to take away, and I think there still is a lot of fun to be had watching this team and tuning in every Sunday and talking about it each and every day throughout each and every week. But I think one thing that could make this December and end of the season better is if you could stop pulling a Denzel Mims disappearing act every single week and get this pod going more consistently.
It was finals. You're right. I apologize to our listeners. The last 2 weeks have been pretty crazy. I apologize. We will be more consistent from here on out. I'm on break now, and then we got all of free agency and the draft to talk about, which, if we're being honest, that's the specialty of this podcast. Especially
it's cool. You just had your best week of practice yet. I think we're gonna have a great week this week.
Should we open it up with Denzel Mims? Normally we start with the quarterback, but you know what? Let's mix things around. Since you want to make a Denzel Mims joke, because we didn't do a podcast last week, and so you know, since the Corey Davis injury, this is the big opportunity for Denzel Mims. And well, I guess now we're seeing why he wasn't playing all season long. I mean, he has been an absolute nightmare in the second season. And I guess, I mean, look, it's been, I don't want to beat a dead horse. A lot of people know the issues with Mims. I guess the question I would ask you is, it seems like there's been a considerable regression from year one to year two. I mean, what did you see in Denzel Mims, the player in 2020, that you're just not seeing in Denzel Mims, the player in 2021? Because he's gotten these opportunities the last 2 weeks. I know he was injured during this game, but especially last week and at different points throughout the season. And it just seems like he's not even close to the player that we saw in 2020.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of factors in it, but I think part of it is the scheme. I feel like the Jets ran a more vertical offense last year that emphasized some of those go routes, post routes, where he had a chance to make some of those plays. And although he did make a lot of great plays that did show us that potential, he did also fail quite a few contested catches that a lot of people forgot about. So he was still overall a lot more impactful last year than this year. But I think
he's in the JetX banner on the website. I mean, he had a promising rookie season. I don't think you should downplay it. He was, I would say, borderline in the games that he played as rookie. I thought he was borderline good.
Yeah. So I think the offense kind of played to his strengths a little bit more, but I thought he would be okay in this offense because what he really was the most efficient at last year was not those contested catches, because like I said, he did lose some of those, you know, ultimately kind of bounced out. But what he did really well consistently was catch those passes over the middle, whether it was a drag or a slant or a crossing route, and make plays after the catch. So I thought, okay, this offense is based on those kind of routes. I think he can make plays in that sort of way, but he's just not beating anybody this year. He can't get open, even in the games that he started and played over half the snaps. He's finishing games with one target, two targets, and that's because he can't get open. You can see it on the replays when you're watching the broadcast. You know, Zach Wilson's had a lot of plays the last few weeks where he's taking long sacks, you know, 3, 4, 5 seconds after the snap, and you're like, why isn't he getting the ball out? But then you watch the replay and there's nobody open, and Denzel Mims is often a part of that, just getting locked down with you know, his releases aren't good at the top of the route. He's trying to get his hands on, but he can't shake guys off of him. He's just trying to get physical. But I feel like it does partially have to be the fact that he's struggling this much, I think, has to be partially injury or, you know, medical related as well. He obviously had the food poisoning, then he had COVID, which apparently was very symptomatic for him. So I think there does have to be some degree of physical effects here for him to be bad to this extent. Because like you said, last year he was a probably decent starter or solid starter. So I think there is some physical effects going on. But at the same time, we've seen the penalties. He said way too many of those. We've seen the drops. He's just not capitalizing on the chances he is getting. There's reports of him in practice not fully giving it. So, you know, giving an effort. So it's been a complete nightmare in terms of on-field execution, off-field, putting the work in and impressing the coaches, injuries, health. It's just been a complete collapse.
Yeah, he's certainly never been a technician. It seems like he always relied on those physical gifts, because even last year, I mean, one of the things that we talked about in terms of his positives was, you know, we acknowledge the negative of, look, he's not a guy that creates a lot of separation, but that last minute separation, that ability to catch balls in traffic, that's what makes him great in those possession situations. And you're right. I think the change in offense certainly doesn't help. I think he has a more complicated route tree. I think it's a more complex offense for a receiver to learn. You mentioned the physical stuff, because it does seem like, you know, and you don't want to read too much into this, but you can see it on game. So I guess you can. It seems like when they, I know there was that viral clip a few weeks ago of him doing like the ladder drill, and you see all the other receivers, and it seems like Denzel Mims basically just trips over his 2 feet and is barely trying. And then you see it on the field where it's like these half-ass slant routes. And it really does look like he's not giving much of an effort. And you have to wonder, is that fatigue? I mean, because he doesn't look like a guy who ran the 40 that he ran at his pro day 2 years ago. So it's like, you don't get that much slower in 2 weeks, but he looks slow when he's playing. And so maybe you're right. Maybe the food poisoning or the COVID, whatever other injuries he's got going on, is tiring him out and making him slower, and he's gassing out, and that's why he's not giving much of an effort. It clearly seems to be a mental issue for him as well. I would imagine his confidence is shaken. That doesn't help with drops. Certainly he got a few bad penalties 2 weeks ago. I mean, but he's been, I mean, about it. I don't think I've seen this type of situation. I mean, that I'm trying to remember the last type of situation where there was a guy this promising and then immediately, I mean, it wasn't like he's had some huge fall from grace. I mean, it was pretty much since the spring. I mean, the Jets weren't playing him, and it was like, play Mims. And now he's playing. And it's like, oh, like what happened? And I think you touched on it. It seems like there's multiple factors here. But I'm surprised that he wasn't able to carve himself out more of a role, especially with all the injuries recently with Corey Davis and Elijah Moore. No wonder Jeff Smith's playing above him, because, and Braxton Berrios and Keelan Cole, because those guys as of right now are better than him. You know, look, he has 3 more weeks and Corey Davis is out for the season. So that big body physical receiver, the Jets don't have. And so Mims is going to have to be that for these next three weeks. And we'll see if he can maybe put together one or two games here. They gave him one deep shot in this game against Miami, but you know, it was overthrown. And you know, I have to go watch the All-22 to see the type of route that Mims ran. But I know on the fumble that happened, that I think it was in the fourth quarter or whatever, where Berrios ran the little bubble screen and the Mims just came over on the slant. That's what Wilson wanted to hit. And it just looked like that route took forever to develop. And this is a timing-based offense, and Mims seems to throw the timing off of the entire offense. Do you think he's here next year? If you had to make a split second decision, do you think he's a Jet in 2022?
It's tough because, man, I don't think so because he got a lot of trade interest. I think the Jets wanted to hold on to the hope, see what could happen this year. But he's just the extent to which that he's failed within what he can control. Because, like I said, I do think there is some effect, you know, in terms of health that's going on here. But, you know, the drops and the penalties and the lack of effort, because the effort on the practice field that apparently is there, you could see that in the routes too, that he's running during the game. He's very clearly dogging it pretty frequently.
Right.
So it's within what he can control beyond the his injuries and his health and everything. I think he's just not doing enough. You know, it'd be one thing. It's like, all right, maybe he's not 100%, but he catches the balls we give him. He makes plays when he gets a chance. He knows his role. He gives an effort. on the practice field, but he's not doing those things either. So I do think that, you know, if they can get a, and it doesn't feel good to label him with this value, but if they can get a sixth round pick, you know, something, what do you think a team would give up more than him at this point? More than that?
For him? You have to remember Matt Rhule was his college coach. I know Rich Samini pointed that out in his Jets Insider this past week. So, you know, Matt Rhule has an affinity for him. I'm sure he has some fans around the league. Look, there aren't many 6'3 receivers that have his type of athletic profile. But that only gets you so far because clearly you're right. The effort hasn't been there and the route running hasn't been there. Can you get a receiver of Mims's potential in the sixth round? Probably not. I think you're right. He's worth a day three pick, but maybe a fourth, you know. Maybe a fourth and we give back a six or something like that. But you're right. I imagine his trade value may have been closer to a potential third if they had traded him earlier in the season before we've got to see him with more reps. I don't think – and you have to remember, I mean, the coaching staff is not the front office, and although they work together, all reports that the front office does really like Mims, although he was drafted for a different system. I think if the value is really low – I don't think they move him. I think they try to give him one more offseason, see if that route running looks better. He knows his back's against the wall. And, you know, certainly he's been much more of a project than we could have anticipated. But look, he's missed a lot of games. He's been injured on and off. It's a new system for him. It is plausible he could turn it around in year three with a little bit more consistency. And now he's had a year in the offense. I don't think they should sell him for dirt cheap, but I would say signs are pointing to if they get anything of value, if they can get a fourth or something, I think he's gone. And I, and the other thing is even if he's here, I think he's going to be buried on the depth chart because I think the Jets are going to add probably, you know, let's look at that. Out of the receivers that are on the team right now, who do you think comes back? And I guess that opens up the question of what do the Jets need in the receiver room? Because when I watch this game, and obviously we're going to talk about Zach Wilson in a minute, the offensive line was horrendous, and we'll address that. But I think I don't want to say more importantly, but noticeably, the receivers were creating no separation at all. And this offense is designed for receivers to create separation. I think Berrios is a guy who, you know, I'd like the Jets to keep around. I think he's, you know, a nice little wide receiver five, keep him at punt returner, kick returner, backup slot, gives him some gadget stuff. But I don't think he's a long-term starter here. I like Crowder. I think he's a really reliable slot receiver. But and obviously, Elijah Moore has been great. But Corey Davis has been underwhelming, but probably a starter next year as well. I think Keelan Cole has been underwhelming and hasn't really shown much outside of that he's better than Sherrone Peake and Deontay Burnett and whoever else the Jets are trotting out during Darnold's rookie year. And then obviously you have Mims. So out of those receivers, I mean, what do you see this Jets receiver room looking like next year? Because again, they have so many holes and they got to address a lot of different parts of the roster. How much of that do you think is going to be focused on the receiver room?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a position that it will be interesting to see where that kind of slides in on the needs list, because it is something that I think you can, more so than many other positions, feel okay with not upgrading too much. Because, you know, if you go into next year with Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, say you bring back Berrios or Crowder, and that's, you know, your starting three, that's okay. And, you know, that's more serviceable than if you don't upgrade tight end or if you don't upgrade safety, linebacker, things like that. But it's still something you can get a lot better at, considering, you know, Corey Davis didn't have the most impressive year this season. And then beyond that, you don't have much of anything proven. So I would like to see Berrios back. He's a very good returner, and he's been a key component in their, you know, gadget plays this season, end arounds, screens, all the creative plays they've done with lateral passes and things like that. He's been a big part of that, and he's had a nice year. I think he's still not a guy who's ideally your number one slot, but he's absolutely a great piece to have who can do a lot of different things. So I would like to see him re-signed. But beyond that, I would definitely keep the door open to, you know, if go after Davante Adams and Chris Godwin. If it's not the top of your priority list, but if you can get in that mix, then by all means, go for it. Or if you want to get a second tier guy like Christian Kirk or someone in that tier, or if it's a value in the first round, second round, go for it. So I think it's kind of similar to last year, because last year, you know, I think it was, we had a similar viewpoint with the receiver position. You know, we have Mims, then they signed Corey Davis, and they didn't go into the draft. We didn't really see it as a huge need. but they take Elijah Moore. And as it turns out, Denzel Mims has been worth nothing this year. And now Elijah Moore is a piece of the future. So I think unless a position is completely locked down with surefire star talent, you should still look to upgrade it. And receiver is that type of position right now for the Jets. So I would say Berrios gets re-signed. But beyond that, I don't think Cole comes back. He hasn't been a great fit in the offense, I don't think. His game is mostly the acrobatic contested catches that he can make, deep threat. And like I said, with Mims, the vertical game hasn't been huge in this offense, so we haven't been able to see that. And we've seen Cole fail to make some of those catches over the middle. We've seen him do a poor job of separating these past couple games when he's had to start and carry bigger load with Moore and Corey Davis out. So I don't think he's a great fit. Like I said, I think Mims will get traded. So I think Berrios comes back and they make another big move at receiver at some point, whether it's free agency or the draft.
And is Crowder coming back in your eyes?
That's a tough one. What do you think?
I think they bring back Crowder. I mean, it just because depends.
I think a team will pay him to start for them.
Yeah, I think they'll try to bring back Crowder. I think they're going to have their line in the sand. They're not going to pay him over a certain amount, especially since you've seen the emergence of Berrios. This is a team that I think in its prime form is going to run a lot more 12 personnel than 11 personnel. Obviously, you want depth there. But I think Crowder has a unique skill set, and I think he fits the offense. I think they're going to try to bring him back. I do have this feeling that I think everything that Joe Douglas has done up until this point has been – I've liked his plan. I'm not saying the execution, there's been a few misses and whatnot, but I liked his plan. And I think all signs to me are pointing towards this offseason being arguably his most aggressive. I think it's going to be easily his most aggressive he's had to date, but it might be the most aggressive you're going to see out of Douglas, at least for the foreseeable future. I really do think this is going to be an offseason where Douglas goes, I'm not going to say all in, but I think he's going to make a lot of aggressive moves that are going to signify, okay, the rebuild, obviously we're rebuilding, but the rebuild is done. We're going in to try to win games. We're not like thinking about long-term plays anymore. Obviously it's always going to be a factor. Obviously the emphasis is always going to be on the draft. I'm not saying any of that, but I do think, you know, when I think about Josh Allen and Buffalo, how the Bills made that trade for Stephon Diggs and what that's done for Josh Allen's confidence, I really could see the Jets doing something like that at the receiver position. I think you understand with a young quarterback, especially on the rookie contract, you got to do everything you can to surround him with talent. And I think the Jets have a solid receiver core between, if we're saying Davis, Moore, and Crowder. I mean, we've certainly seen worse receiver cores, but they're missing a big piece. And they could go to the draft. Hell, they could do both. But I think that, you know, if there's somebody that shakes free, either in that trade market or free agency, obviously you mentioned Godwin and Adams, and look, there's plenty of months to discuss potential names that could shake free. I could really see Douglas taking a big swing and trying to get a number one wide receiver. And if he can't, then I think you're right. I think he goes, you know, signs either a guy like Gallup or Christian Kirk, like you said, and then addresses it early on in the draft. And then you have a pretty well-rounded receiver room. I know it's not a position that necessarily San Francisco prioritizes, and I guess that's the team you're looking for, similar coaching staff. But they've drafted well at that spot, and you've seen what it's done with Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. So maybe they go away from the big money free agent route and draft another guy to pair with Moore. Obviously, they have two first-round picks. They could use one of them there. But I really think it's either going to be that's a high draft pick or a big move in free agency or the trade market. I think the Jets are going to make a big swing at their receiver spot. I just think they don't want to trot out what they've been trotting out for Zach Wilson. He needs people who can consistently make separation. I think you have one in Elijah Moore. I think Corey Davis, if you play him more in the big slot type of role, can have a lot of success. But I think you're missing one more really, truly dominant or at least dynamic receiver in that room. And then I think they try to bring Crowder back. You bring Berrios back. And then at that point, if that's your room and you already have five guys out there, maybe you bring back Keelan Cole for some solid depth. Let's talk about Zach Wilson. We just spent a while on the receivers there, but I think it's a fascinating thing to look at over the last few weeks. I mean, obviously we don't get Elijah Moore back this weekend. He'll have two more games at the end of the season. This is, to me, it's Denzel Mims, can he show anything that that proves the Jets should hang on to him as a project any much longer? I mean, I don't know. Anybody else can Braxton Berrios or Keelan Cole or somebody make some sort of stamp to say they should be in this room next year? Because right now, I think, like you said, a lot of these guys are expendable. Even Crowder might not be here. Let's talk about Wilson. Obviously, I thought the Philly game was his best game of the season. I mean, I know it's close with Tennessee, but I thought when you saw 3 weeks ago from Zach Wilson in the first half of Philly is the type of quarterback that you're hoping to see next year and for years to come. And I think you saw that same quarterback for most of the first half against Miami, just a guy who is decisive, took the easy stuff, was accurate with the football. I mean, he just looked like an NFL quarterback. And you know that there's all that talent brewing there. I mean, you could see, especially in this game, he made a few backyard plays. You forget how elusive he is in the pocket. We haven't seen too much of that since week one. You wonder how much the injuries have contributed to that. But if you remember week one, I mean, he was making a guy miss pretty much every single play. We saw that a lot more. And then obviously, you know, he has the cannon. So what the quarterback that we saw in the first half of this game and the first half against Philadelphia, that's one that I'm really excited about because you know all the deep stuff and the magic stuff is there, but you were watching him operate, making great pre-snap reads and post-snap processing. He just looked like an NFL quarterback. He didn't look lost. And that was really, you know, intriguing for me. Obviously, the Eagles game, they barely touched the ball in the third quarter. They lost a lot of their momentum, but I still thought all in all, that was his best game of the season. The Saints game was, I wasn't as down on it as some other people. I didn't think it was like the worst thing in the world, but yeah, it was uninspiring. I mean, he was inaccurate at the football, a lot of easy misses, boring game. I mean, he didn't look that inspiring, but it was a rookie type performance. And then this one, again, similar to the Eagles game, great first half, second half, not as great. But in this game, I thought, you know, unlike the Eagles game where they didn't really touch the ball and they didn't get really a chance, he had a few chances at the end of this game to really tie it up, to take it overtime. They were, you know, potentially take a lead, whatever, because the Jets were up multiple times by 10 points or more, and they weren't able to do it. And how much of that do you think falls on Zach Wilson, Michael, and how much of that do you think falls on the horrendous offensive line play we saw and the struggling receiver room as we talked about?
Yeah, I think I really like this Dolphins game from Zach Wilson. I think in the first half, the team was supporting him pretty decently in the first half. He was getting the ball out quick. Receivers were making plays after the catch. The plays that were called were working. And he had some poised plays under pressure. And when he wasn't pressured, he got the ball out on time. And the biggest thing is he was just hitting the easy throws, and he was hitting them perfectly, because completing them is one thing, but he's putting the ball exactly where it needed to be so receivers could catch it in stride and get the most after the catch that they could. And the offense was really moving well. But in the second half, and you know, Wilson made a couple mistakes. There might have been a few sacks or one or two sacks he could have avoided if he stepped up in a different way or was a little less aggressive trying to extend it. And he did have a couple easy throws that he missed high. So he wasn't perfect, and part of it was on him. But this was the worst support that he's gotten all season in the second half of this game. And this isn't me even making excuses for him, because in most of his games this season, I think he's been supported at least decently and given a fair chance to succeed, even if it hasn't been great support. But this was the first time we saw that kind of 2018 Darnold sort of level, and which ironically, one of the worst examples of that in Darnold's rookie season was in Miami, that horrendous game before he went out due to injury. But this was the first time we saw that kind of support where it's like, wow, he has zero chance to do anything, because you really miss George Fant in this one. Connor McDermott was a massive downgrade. Brian Griffin was blocking poorly. I thought Morgan Moses had a bad game on the first watch. The running backs weren't picking things up. It was a complete mess with the protection. And then we talked about the receivers. The separation was also a huge issue in this game. There was, as much as some of the sacks were on the O-line, some of them were coverage sacks, and there was just nobody open, nowhere for him to go. So it was a mess around him in the second half of this one. And I don't think there was much that he could have done. And I don't think there are many quarterbacks in the league who would have done any better in that situation in the second half. But first half, when things were functioning normally. I thought he was really good and got his accuracy back on track after a very down game in terms of his accuracy. So overall, I think he was above average. And I think this is the second time in 3 weeks he's had a pretty solid game. I even liked what he did against Houston and from a decision-making and processing standpoint. So overall, the Saints game was definitely a down game, but 3 out of 4 games since he came back from injury, I like what I saw. I think there are steps forward he's taking in terms of processing, decision-making, timing, and the accuracy is a work in progress, and it's going to continue to be until he gets a whole offseason to sort of refine his mechanics and everything. But we've seen some steps there as well. I thought Philly was his best game from that perspective. The Saints, again, huge step back, but stepped back up this game. So I like the progress we've seen from him post-return from injury. And this was a good bounce-back game from him, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, clearly from an analytical perspective, and obviously you're the analytics king of Jets Twitter, if you look at what it says on the numbers of Zach Wilson's rookie year in comparison to other rookie quarterbacks, there's not many other guys you can point to that went on to have great careers, which is concerning. Obviously, the big one's Josh Allen, who very similar situation and a recent example of a guy coming from a smaller school with a ton of potential. And year one, just ups and downs. You saw some flashes, and other times you wonder why this guy's even in the league. Clearly, both of them had some accuracy issues. Wilson, that wasn't the case in college, which gives me hope. But Allen had that, you know, didn't have great accuracy in college and has fixed it in the NFL. So he's the guy that all Jets fans look to. But at the end of the day, Zach Wilson isn't a 6'5 quarterback that can run the way Allen runs. And that's what Allen has always relied upon when anything is failing. From a passer standpoint, he's always been able to rely on his legs. And Wilson doesn't really have that to the same extent. Obviously, he can, you know, he's not immobile, but he's not the same runner that Josh Allen is. So he's going to have to be more efficient. But the point remains that you've seen it done before, and so there's no reason to count him out already. But yeah, I mean, I would say as a whole, his rookie season has been concerning at times. But like you said, post-injury, if this is the rookie quarterback that we've been getting all season, I think the sentiment would be a lot different about him. I think, you know, he had that awful game against New England. The Broncos game was meh. I mean, obviously he had the fun Titans game, and then, you know, the Falcons game was also kind of meh. So it's just been kind of a weird season for him. And then he missed so much time in the middle that we haven't really gotten a full sample size to really judge him on. I think these last three games are really crucial, and they'll set the tone for the rest of the offseason. It's basically, if Wilson could do what Darnold did at the end of 2018, which is string together a few objectively good games, you know, not like, obviously you like what you saw from him because you are able to zoom out and see the big picture and understand that he's developing and understand how bad everything else around him was today. But for the narrative of the Jets offseason to be more positive than it is at this moment, Wilson needs to put together at least back-to-back objectively good games and a full game, because he hasn't played a full game of good competitive football at all this season. I mean, the Titans game, he wasn't good in the first quarter. Obviously, things got better towards the end of the second quarter, had a great second half, and they won it in overtime. Great. Obviously, the Eagles game, like we said, first half was great. Second half didn't really touch the ball. Not much you can do there. And then this game, first half, great. Second half, not so great. But again, how much can you blame him? And then other games, he just hasn't had a single good half. So, you know, for me, he has to put something that's more objective on paper. And his post-injury return to be like, okay, you know, these are legitimate signs of improvement. But without Elijah Moore, without Corey Davis, if George Fant's going to miss any more time, we'll see if Becton comes back. I mean, that's going to be harder. And when you look at the teams they're playing, you know, outside of Jacksonville this weekend, you have Tampa Bay and you have Buffalo, which are two Super Bowl contenders and arguably could be playing in the Super Bowl. Maybe Buffalo is resting their starters week 17, but with the way the division's shaking out in New England, I don't know if that's going to be the case. So those last two games are incredibly hard teams and incredibly hard defenses. So I don't know. I think for me, if Wilson can put together a great game against Jacksonville, which first of all, just to beat Trevor Lawrence, obviously the Jaguars are arguably the worst team in football, so that shouldn't be anything to hang your cap on. But if he can put together a dominant and objectively good performance, and again, he's not going to have Moore or Davis, and we'll see about Fant, if he puts together an objectively good performance there, objectively great performance, I would say, because I think the bar gets raised when you're playing Jacksonville, and has a good game against Tampa Bay or Buffalo, I think you can be happy. But as of right now, I mean, you know, I think the narrative is not going to be too positive. But like you said, when you look at things objectively, this game was there wasn't too much he could do. I mean, there are a lot of times where you see the beat reporters saying like, oh, Zach Wilson held onto the ball too long there, has to get rid of it. And it's like, where is he supposed to throw it? I mean, taking a sack there or throwing it away are really your only two options when your receivers aren't getting open. And the amount of free rushers or just guys getting beat on the line with Miami rushing three or four, you know, the one thing I'll give him credit for was this was an incredibly tough matchup for him. Coming into it, I mean, Miami just is a defense that pretty much capitalizes on all his strengths. They get after the quarterback fast. They play a lot of tight man coverage. They are a complex defense. Darnold never figured him out in his time playing against Brian Flores. So you can give him credit for that first half, because I thought legitimately he looked good against a defense that is not a good matchup for him and a shorthanded offense. So, the one thing I do want to get your thoughts on was, Zach Wilson has been so good with the media this season. I think he's been more insightful and more self-reflective and has given, 300 word answers. I feel damn near every single question, but he's getting panned because I love DJ. I think he's awesome. So this isn't necessarily an indictment on him, but he's getting panned because, DJ asked him about, since his return, how they are averaging 16 points and they haven't crossed 300 yards. And then Wilson said, I don't really concern myself with any of that. That little clip has gotten taken completely out of context, and how he's being dragged, like he doesn't care about the offense, when he's clearly referring to, the stats that DJ brought up. I think that little, and obviously, look, Twitter is not real, so you can't really overreact to it. But the fact that he's being dragged over just that little moment of just being curt. I mean, he didn't really want to answer the question. He just said, I don't concern myself with that. And he's being dragged is a great, study on why it's hard to be a great quarterback in New York. I mean, literally this kid has done everything right when it comes to, standing in the podium and addressing the media. And he makes one little, I don't want to talk about it. And I guarantee you on Sports Talk Radio Monday, that is going to be a topic where people are saying Zach Wilson doesn't care about the offensive struggles. And some, radio jockey is going to be ripping him a new one. And it's just like, that's why it's hard to win in this city. It's because I thought that was so absurd that this kid has been nothing short of for all his off the fields or on field struggles, I thought he's been nothing short of amazing off the field. And just that little soundbite is getting him torn to shreds. I was curious to get your thoughts on that before we move on.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty ridiculous. I think there's no shortage of legitimate, like you said, no shortage of legitimate criticism on the field that you can throw his way, but off the field, I don't think there's a single thing he's done wrong. He's, taking the blame for his mistakes when he should. He's said all the right things. He's given detailed answers about his struggles, which he does not have to do, but he's done anyway to try to be transparent and to acknowledge that he understands he's struggling and try to let people know that he is identifying those issues and trying to improve upon them, which again, doesn't have to do. He can give cookie cutter answers. And I think that's why this kind of stood out, is because he kind of has raised the bar for himself in terms of what we expect from him with these answers, because he is so uniquely insightful, so that when he's not doing that, now it kind of stands out a little bit different. Whereas that's just kind of the expectation for anybody. So I don't think that there's any criticism that he deserved for what he said after this game. I think in terms of off the field, and even I was talking to you about this before the game, I think he does a really good job with those pregame, pump up huddles, just trying to pump up the guys. I think he brings good enthusiasm and energy and passion in his voice. I think he's probably top 10 in that category. So off field stuff with Zach Wilson, I think we're all good. It's just the on field stuff.
We're going to add that to a scouting report. It's got to be hard as a rookie especially when you're a top rookie and you're not playing well, to have to do those pregame huddles, which inherently just seem kind of awkward. That's more for a skill position player or a defender, really, an energetic player. When you have those quarterbacks, I mean, I remember Sam Darnold listening to him when he was mic'd up against the Colts, and he was like, let's put a dagger in their hearts. we're going to get really good at this. And it's just like, all right, well, that didn't inspire anybody. I guess you're right. He does. He tries on that. Oh, the most absurd quote. And I don't think this got enough attention because it was before the game. But another thing out of Rich Cimini's Jets Insider from this last week was Ryan Griffin and how his dad keeps like a list of all the quarterbacks he's been playing. And, you know, Ryan Griffin calls it a revolving door because I think he's played with like, I think it was like 20 quarterbacks or something. And then he's saying like, well, Travis Kelce, who was drafted in the same draft class, you know, he's had all these, you know, he's had great quarterbacks to play with. And it's like, first of all, you're not Travis Kelce. And then I think the other quote was, and you put it perfectly. He said like, I've had 9 years of this, said Griffin, who said he's not complaining, which is just like complained Griffin, who said he's not complaining. I just thought that whole quote, it's like Ryan Griffin, every time he catches the ball, and I guess he had the one kind of good backyard play today. He had a brutal miss on a block that really set the Jets back. Ryan Griffin, every time he touches the ball, it looks like he's about to fall over. I mean, the guy has two left feet. The entire time he has the ball, it looks like he's just stumbling forward. It's like that animation in Madden when you get tripped up, but then you get a few extra yards after catch and your guy is just kind of flailing forward. And that's how Ryan Griffin runs every time he has the ball. And so the audacity to compare himself to Travis Kelce, it's like, yeah, a team with a good quarterback wouldn't enlist you as a tight end on their team because you're bad. I mean, like, look, I mean, I don't want to be Ryan Griffin's attitude has just bothered me this entire season. He's been awful on the field and he seems to be hypercritical off of it. And it's just like, there aren't many times in this podcast you go directly after a player, but that quote was so ridiculous. I was just, it got under my skin. It was just like, Ryan, why don't you just shut up? Like, why are you going to the media to complain about the quarterbacks you've played with? It's like, I think Zach Wilson has just the same amount of right to complain about the tight ends he's had to play with this year. But I don't know. Maybe I should just get off my soapbox. But
no, I mean, if he caught some passes and made some blocks, maybe he could have demanded some interest in free agency and signed with the team that has a good quarterback. But if you're bad, you're on a bad team.
He's the only NFL player I've seen that just doesn't know how to run in a straight line. I mean, he's incredibly slow and unbalanced. I mean, he has safe hands, I guess. But outside of that, I mean, it's just, I mean, he's about as ungraceful as you can get for an NFL skill position player. So I don't imagine that list is going to grow much longer, much larger for Ryan Griffin, because I don't anticipate him being in the league next year. I guess we'll move on to that was a little mean. I'm sorry, Ryan. I just, that quote was just it was so absurd. It got under my skin. They lost. I'm sorry, Ryan. You do something. He was fun in 2019. I'll give him that. In 2019, I thought he was legitimately, I think he was Joe Douglas's first contract extension. So not a great sign for things to come, but you know, he got that extension. And then if I recall in the few months remaining, I'm going to give him some slack. Cause I do recall him saying that he'll never be the same after that injury. Yeah. And he was right. He has not been the same. So, you know, maybe that's the reason he can't, you know, run in a straight line. Let's talk about, let's talk about the O-line real quickly though. I thought the running back group was great today. Michael Carter, again, is becoming my favorite player in this team. He just cannot get brought down by the first tackler. Tevin Coleman, tremendous amount of pop. I think both those guys come back next year. We'll see if they add anybody else to that group. I mean, Ty Johnson got benched today. So we'll see about that, but I love how Coleman and Carter played today. Before we go to the defense and then get out of here, the offensive line was horrendous, Michael. Your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, they've been missing Becton the entire season. At this point, I don't think he comes back. I think they just shut him down for the rest of the year. Fant has filled in admirably for them. First game he's missed this season, and it was an absolute clusterfuck. And then there were times in this game where AVT was out, and it was even worse. So what were your thoughts on how the O-line played? Obviously, it was awful. And then how big of a need do you think O-line is this offseason? Because I think in the middle of the season, it kind of seemed like the O-line, especially, you know, the way Fan had been playing, it was like, you know, the O-line's pretty solid. I mean, I wouldn't say they're a great unit, but they're competent. They were giving Wilson some time, and we got other holes in this team, so maybe the Jets should, you know, try to bring back the unit they've got and invest assets elsewhere. But after today, it's like, oh, wow, you see how bad the depth is, and you just see the potential floor for what Zach Wilson could be dealing with up front. And you know the type of GM you have in Joe Douglas who wants to build the trenches. So how big of an emphasis do you think the O-line gets this offseason?
Well, I think for this game in particular, I see a lot of people trying to start mocking O-linemen to the Jets, but I think this game isn't the one to overreact to in terms of O-line need, because look, the two starting tackles were out. Well, obviously Becton has been the whole year, but George Fant was out. Some of the worst plays happened in the short span that ABT was out when Feeney replaced him. So I think, and that's just in general too. I think there have been a lot of instances this season in which the Jets struggle because backups are in instead of the starters, and then we overrate that need a little bit. So I think this is that example, I think. And I wrote about an article about this during this week ahead of this game, in which I wrote about how there is a decent chance the Jets bring back the same O-line next year, Fant, AVT, McGovern, LDT, and Becton. And, you know, not 100% chance it happens, but there is somewhat of a chance that it could. And that if that does happen, I think that it's not a bad place to be in. I think that can still be a good offensive line. So I think absolutely it should be a priority with Becton's health. You don't know if you're going to get LDT back. I think you can upgrade over McGovern if you want to be aggressive and, you know, risk maybe getting worse than him for a chance to get better. And then I think, yeah, like I said, you can get depth with Becton's injury concern. So I think it absolutely should be up there on the priority list, but I don't think this game necessarily changes it that much just because Fant was out and that was a big part of it. But I think I'm higher on this O-line than most. I think it has been a slightly below average unit, like an 18 to 20 kind of group. And especially since LDT has come into the mix, it's been better aside from this game, obviously. But this game is definitely terrible. Like I said earlier, it was the first time that I think they played to a level where the quarterback had zero chance this season. They've had bad games, but
right,
this was one where it's like, all right, there's nothing Zach Wilson can do right now. So it was really bad, but it definitely demonstrated Fant's impact. And that's kind of how the best O-linemen show their impact. It's rare, you know, just look at Fant, for example. It's rare you say, wow, he was great in this game. You could just see how dominant he was. But then when he's out and someone much worse than him is in the game and you start noticing the left tackle position a lot more, that's when you realize how good the left tackle is playing, because you're not talking about him because he's not making mistakes. So Fant was missed in this game, and it really demonstrated how solid of a season he's having.
I think one of the other things, and this is something you pointed out, I think, earlier in the season, is how bad the tight end blocking has been, and go back on Ryan Griffin. But it seemed like since Croft has come back, they played a lot more 12 personnel. And then like earlier in the season when they were playing a lot more 12 personnel, it seems like all those issues in pass protection and blocking came back up because you're relying on those tight ends to block. And in the last few weeks, they've gone away completely from 12 personnel because they've had the injuries at tight end. They've been playing a lot more 11 personnel, and you've had a lot more just five-man blocking sets with your running back, and the offensive line looked better. And look, I think with the Fant injury and the way Miami gets after the quarterback, it was going to be tough to keep Zach Wilson clean the entire day. But a lot of the issues, there were at least a few sacks that were caused directly by poor tight end blocking. And so you can see that they want to be a 12 personnel offense. They like the versatility it gives you. You give them a run look, but you can pass out of it as well. Obviously they want to do that, but the personnel they have right now is not built to do that. And I think that is a big issue. I think with Fant, or before I get to Fant, with LDT, I think they definitely bring him back next year. I think you're right. I think they try to bring back all of their starters. Hell, even Moses, even then you're going to have the issue of Moses, Becton, and Fant, just because you see how big depth is. I'm not saying you pay Moses crazy money to come back, but I would slightly overpay depth at offensive line just because it is one of those positions that seems to constantly, especially those tackles, get injured. And if you're stuck playing Connor McDermott, you're screwed. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I'd like to see Chuma Adoga, I guess, if they're in that position again. I thought he looked okay earlier this season, but it seems like tackles get rolled up on or get injured all the time, and you're stuck playing backups. And it's the teams that have competent backups in that offensive line that are able to just continue to run the rock. So this is clearly going to be a position that Joe Douglas is going to keep investing resources into. I think, you know, he made his bones being able to scout offensive linemen late, and we haven't really seen him take any offensive linemen and day three or day two, I mean, we saw Cameron Clark and he hasn't hit the field at all. So we'll see if he can do anything this offseason. But I think you're going to see, I think they will invest more resource into this offensive line. But I think throughout Douglas's tenure, you're always going to see day three picks used on offensive linemen starting soon, just to keep that pipeline of young offensive lineman talent coming through New Jersey. But I think the biggest question to me is what they do with Fant. And obviously he's under contract for another year. You have to give Joe Douglas credit because that contract was ridiculed at the time. The signing was ridiculed at the time. Hell, you have to give him credit for LDT as well, because Joe Douglas has made some mistakes, but I think all things considered, he's done a solid job rebuilding this offensive line. You could just get a sense of how bad they were because it's been like a 3-year process and you're talking about them being like below average and we're considering that good progress. But, you know, I think Becton was great before he was injured, you know, at least his rookie season. I think Vera Tucker has been great. McGovern's been underwhelming. I guess you can criticize him there, but to be able to get LDT for literally nothing, to be able to sign Morgan Moses before training camp, and how he's great in the run game. He has some struggles in the passing game, but he's been solid. And then obviously Fant, who I think has been a rock star at left tackle when it comes to pass blocking. Do you think, and you mentioned, and I don't know if you meant to do this or not, but you said, let's bring back the starting offensive lineman, and you listed it in order. You left out Moses and you kind of threw Becton in there. And I don't know if you meant to do this, but it kind of sounded like he would be the right tackle in your offensive line that you're imagining. Do you think that the Jets are going to explore that this season hey, let's keep Fant at left tackle? He's said it publicly and he's clearly more comfortable at left tackle. It's maybe the one that you'd want the more dominant pass blocking of your two tackles at. And then we got Becton, who's the better run blocker. You could stick him on the right side and you can mow people down and run right. I mean, what do you think about the potential of moving Becton to right tackle? Obviously it's easier said than done, but do you think there's a chance they try that out?
Well, when I listed it out that way, I did not intend to switch them, but it's going to be interesting because Fant had such a good season. And again, this game, it demonstrated his value as much as any of his own individual performances, you know, just seeing how it looked without him. But it's going to be an interesting dilemma because, you know, they intended to have Becton at left tackle and Fant at right tackle. And I'm sure once Becton comes back this season, if he comes back, that it's just going to go right back to the way it was supposed to be. Becton will come in on the left, Fant back to the right. But with Fant looking as comfortable as he has on that left side, it's going to be something that maybe they'll think about throughout the offseason. And that is typically, I think, the balance that teams look for. Pass pro a little more important on the left side, you know, being the quarterback's blind side, than right side a little more important to have run blocking, considering, you know, that's oftentimes, I would say, a little more common that teams run towards. But it's going to be an interesting dilemma for sure. My prediction would be that they just stick with what they intended to do and keep Becton at left tackle, move Fant back to the right. But and then from there, if things don't necessarily work out, maybe they, you know, you give them both reps at both spots throughout the offseason. So then if things don't work out during the year, they have the flexibility to change it. Whether that's Fant not converting to right, transitioning his success back to right tackle, or Becton not taking a huge leap at left tackle off of a good rookie season, but still not quite at that potential that we know he can hit. So that's what I think is going to happen, but it's definitely a good problem to have, I think.
Yeah, but if you remember week one, how bad Fant was right against Carolina at right tackle. And he said it when he signed. Part of the reason he signed with the Jets, obviously the money helped, but he wanted an opportunity to be a full-time left tackle. He said how much more comfortable he was. When the Jets signed him, it was based off the film he put in Seattle as a left tackle, which he looked pretty good. He's not an amazing run blocker, but he's competent there. He's been a great pass blocker. I think the issue is that Becton's ceiling is so high that you'd rather have a long-term left tackle that you're going to pay franchise numbers to, because assuming it, you know, like he didn't have an amazing training camp reportedly and he's been injured. So we'll see how he comes back. But if he continues to grow off the path that we saw his rookie year and he turns into a stud tackle, if you had to choose, you'd want him on the left side. And I think the Jets don't want to give up on that. And also you run the risk of, if you move him over to right tackle and then it doesn't really work in the middle of the season, and then you got to try to move him back, you just might mess with his head. And you've invested more in him than you have in George Fant. So I think you're right. I think they probably go back to left tackle Becton, right tackle Fant next year. See if Fant can translate some of the reps that he's gotten this season. He's gotten a ton of them, and you know, see if he can put it together at right tackle. But you know, for Becton, I think he's a guy that has played right tackle in college, so he has some of that versatility. But I'm very curious to see what they do when he comes back. But for me, I mean, I think O-line is a huge need. I think you saw today. I shouldn't say huge. I think it's still a need for this team. But when you look at some of the issues on the defensive side of the football, or even at receiver, like we've talked about, and tight end, I don't know if they're going to use, you know, I know a lot of people have them taking Linderbaum with that second first round pick, or maybe an offensive tackle. If they really fall in love with the prospect, I could see it. But I think they're going to address some needs at offensive line, but I think they're going to prioritize the depth and try to bring back the unit they have and try to shore up some other parts. All right, let's talk about the defense just a little bit before we get out of here. I thought we'll start with the positive, and I think this was one of the rare positives from this game, is I thought the young cornerbacks looked awesome. And you have to give the coaching staff and the front office a lot of credit, because the cornerback spot was supposed to be the Jets' weakest position heading into the season, and they've turned into a strength. I mean, they've been a strength for this team all year, and they've continued to get better. I mean, Saul's right. With every single game, they get more reps, they get more comfortable. Bryce Hall is proving that, you know, I think he's established himself throughout the season that, hey, this is a guy who can be a starting corner in this league. You can put him at court, you know, your second corner. Today, he looked like a cornerback number one, and I'm not saying he was going up against the best competition in the world, but Bryce Hall is showing that he is a perfect scheme fit, and he clearly has the physical talent to shine. The fact that the Jets got him in the fifth round, he is an absolute steal. He was amazing, and obviously Echols had a few great plays, including a pick six, and I thought the slot corners between Guidry and MC Squared were great as well. I thought corner was awesome. So how big of a need is corner in your mind? I know we're looking towards the offseason, but when you're 3-11 or 3-12, whatever the Jets are at this point, these are the things you got to do. Do you think corner at this point, I mean, are you comfortable rolling Echols out there again as a starter next year? Or do you think they probably bring somebody back? But first, your thoughts on their performance on Sunday.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, they had their pitfalls at times. Hall gave up the touchdown on the slant, and Echols had the one play where he should have given up a touchdown or a long gain if it was a better throw, but he recovered excellently. And that's one of the key skills of corner is it's a tough position. You're going to lose a lot. It's very hard to consistently lock guys down, but you're going to get chances to make up for getting beat because quarterbacks aren't perfect. They're going to miss throws. It's hard to make throws in the NFL. So when you're lucky enough to get those chances to recover, you got to take advantage. And that's exactly what Echols did on that one play, underthrown ball. It was a 50-50, and he did an excellent job of locating it and breaking it up. Then obviously later he had the pick six, which was a great play, and he gave credit to Michael Carter II for helping him with that one as well. So it was a good performance for sure, even though it may not have been perfect. It was overall a lot more good than bad, I think. And the defensive struggles were more so in the D-line, the linebackers for not stopping the run. Safeties gave up some big plays. So, but the corners are really good. And throughout the season, they've been pretty okay, which is still probably makes them the best position group on this defense that is probably the worst in the league. So it's kind of like wide receiver to me. It's a position where I think there are other spots you need to hit first. Like, I think safety is more important. I think a linebacker next to Mosley is more important. If you can add more edge, another big time edge rusher, I think that's more important. But absolutely, if you can, there's a big free agent you want to go after, if there's a trade you can make, if you want to take one of the top corners at the top of the draft, by all means, go ahead and do it. But it's another position where the emergence of the young players gives them flexibility to where, you know, if you have to go out with Hall, Echols, MC Squared again next season, not ideal. Again, like I said, by all means, pursue upgrades, but worst case scenario, that's not a bad spot to be with all those guys going into, you know, Eccles and MC Squared going into their second seasons, Hall going into his third, you should get more development out of them after a season in which they already combined to be a fairly league average trio, then that's a pretty positive outlook to have. So I think Hall has proven he's clearly a starter. We'll see if he can be the number one corner on a good defense. I think he does have that potential. You would like to see him track the ball a little bit better, make some more big plays, but he's definitely a starter, a good one at that. MC Squared should be at least a solid slot guy. And Eccles has had ups and downs this season, but for a sixth round guy to show that he can at least be a good backup and a NFL caliber corner is a win. Most sixth round picks amount to nothing. That's just the fact. So to get a guy who is a valuable piece, even if it's just a backup, is a huge victory. But he does also have the potential to maybe be a starter. So it's very promising what they've gotten out of the corner position. I would absolutely look to upgrade it and stay open to any big time players you can get at that position, because they can use as many big time playmakers on defense as they can get, regardless of position. But at the same time, it's a position where I think you can feel a little more comfortable if you're not, you don't have to force things as much as you do with some of the other positions. I think you need to upgrade safety. You really need another linebacker, and you could use another big time guy up front as well. But corner, absolutely chase it, but there's a lot positive going there, so you can feel good about it either way.
Yeah, I think this the room is maybe one more veteran away. I mean, we'll see what we'll learn a lot about their strategy. Maybe they just double down and just keep taking young corners and just rely on the system to develop them, because there isn't as much pressure on these corners in this zone based, 49ers defense as there would be in, Rex Ryan's defense or a heavy man defense where you want to blitz guys and leave your corners on islands. These corners aren't left alone too much, but look, if you have a great corner room, maybe it opens up some of the versatility in the scheme and you can send more guys and trust these corners and more man looks. I just think, I know Derek Stingley's a guy that I see mocked to the Jets a lot, and look, it's December, but hey, I mean, we're getting to the point. I mean, on this podcast last year, we were doing mock drafts, I think in October. So, I think it's okay to talk about some draft stuff. I keep seeing Derek Stingley mocked the Jets, and I don't see it. I think corner's not an extremely valued position for this team, and I think the cornerback room has been pretty great. So it's like, look, I think they're another guy away. I think Eccles is solid depth, but I'd probably be better if he was either competing for the second spot or is, cornerback number four, and you got Carter and Guidry in the slot, Hall outside, and then somebody else. But I think either a second round draft pick or a veteran. And I think that room looks better than burning a top 10 pick on a corner like Derek Stingley, who's had a lot of injury issues, and, rookie corners in general tend to struggle. We don't have to get into this today, but then there's the argument of do you take a safety again? Obviously Kyle Hamilton is outside of the two edge rushers, maybe the best defensive player in the draft. And he's a complete unicorn, and in some ways safety is more valued than corner is in this defense, and safety is a huge need for this defense. But do you have the Jamal Adams PTSD? Obviously Adams was a good player when the Jets had him, so I don't know, that's a conversation for a different day. But as far as the young cornerbacks looked, I thought they were tremendous. However, the rest of the defense was pretty awful, specifically the run defense. And again, like you said, sometimes when guys get injured and you're forced to play your depth, fans overreact to, the needs or overreact to the game and think, wow, look how bad we are. Obviously the Jets didn't have their best run stuffer in Foley Fatukasi. Obviously they didn't have Quinnen Williams for the majority of the game, so that hurt. But, oh God, I mean, it looked like the Dolphins could have gotten 5 yards every carry. I mean, Duke Johnson, who I haven't heard of in years at this point, tearing the Jets up. I mean, this is easily the worst Jets defense I've seen in my lifetime. I've been watching them. I mean, as a kid, I watched them a little bit, but basically from 2008 to now, I've watched every single game in depth and, really understood what was happening. And this is easily the worst defense I've seen. It's not even close. I mean, teams can run the ball at will. And even when the Jets have been bad over the last decade, it's always been their offense. It's their defense. And some of the years where they've been awful, their defense has actually been okay. And you pair it with a solid offense and the Jets could have maybe made the playoffs. But this defense is horrific. So my question to you, obviously there's talent deficiencies. That is out of the question that there is needs on pretty much every level, literally every level of this defense. But how concerned are you about the scheme and the coaching of Ulbrich and throw Saul in there as well from what you've seen out of this unit? And I will say they did rise to the occasion at the end of this game against Miami. They needed to hold him 3 and out, and they did. So you have to give credit where credit's due. And as we said, the young corners are good, but the run defense was awful. The Jets blew a 10-0 lead and a 17-7 lead. But this has been an issue the entire season. So how concerned are you about the schematics of this defense?
I think it's definitely a concern. It's not something that, is worthy of firing Ulbrich or making huge sweeping changes after this season, because I think they had the talent in place that they wanted to run this defense, but a lot of it was lost between the safety injuries and most importantly, losing Carl Lawson. And you can throw Vinnie Curry into there and Bryce Huff missing half the season, who I think actually did have a good game. I saw some wins from him that didn't get rewarded, but I saw him winning some battles. But either way, I think they didn't quite have the talent they wanted because of injuries. But this is a scheme that is very talent dependent. You need to have big time talent to win. That's the way it's designed, to emphasize the ability of the players up front to win one-on-one matchups. And a scheme that doesn't necessarily do a lot of, we're going to simulate pressures or we're going to confuse the quarterback by mixing up coverages, sort of like the Dolphins did throughout this game. It's not a scheme that's going to win through sheer play calling that frequently. It's a scheme that's designed to unleash the talent of the players you have. So when you're not talented like the Jets are this year, because they've had so many injuries, and they don't have the depth to overcome that because they won 2 games last year and they're not a talented roster yet, it's going to have bad results like this, because you're relying on, okay, against the run, our D-line flies upfield. They don't really affect it that much. It's on the linebackers and safeties to make tackles. And when your linebackers and safeties are the guys the Jets have right now, they're going to miss a lot of tackles and you're going to get run on and you're going to give up screens. So it's a very talent-based defense. And the times that this defense has worked, you go back to the Seattle. Seattle's where all this originates. Saleh, Ulbrich, it all comes from Pete Carroll's background. That coaching tree, they were successful when they had Richard Sherman and Bobby Wagner and Cam Chancellor and all this talent. That's when they were able to make it work. San Francisco was able to make it work when they had once they got Nick Bosa in there with Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Richard Sherman again, Fred Warner, great talent. And then Jacksonville was able to make it work when they had Ngakoue, when they had Jalen Ramsey, AJ Boye. You need a lot of talent to make it work. So if Carl Lawson's healthy, if they can get another edge rusher, upgrade this defense, it can be successful. But if next year they have more injuries again, or they don't still quite have the talent for whatever reason, whether it's injuries, signings don't pan out, whatever, next year Saleh needs to show, and Ulbrich, that they can adjust. And because that's what made Saleh impressive, a big part of what made him an impressive candidate to me, is that last year in San Francisco, Niners had all these injuries. They changed things up, played a little bit differently, blitz a little bit more, and they were still a great defense in spite of all those injuries. And that's what made him impressive to me. But this year, very little adjusting. They've still been playing, straight up 4-3 defense all season. Not a lot of hybrid fronts to help them stop the run, get a nose tackle in there. We've seen very little usage of the nose tackle with Foley. He's been playing a lot of 2-eye and 3-technique. So not a lot of creativity this year, which, I guess they're trying to instill the scheme, whatever. But next season, the microscope's going to be on the coaching a little bit more. If they don't have the talent to execute the scheme to its max potential, then the coaching needs to step in and do what it can and adjust to get the most out of what they have. They haven't done that this year. They've been focused on instilling the scheme, which I understand, it's a long-term view, and, you know, sacrificing the present to get these guys used to the scheme and try to make it work long term. But next year is when they got to do more to help these guys out and get the most out of what they have. So I am worried about it. And it is a legitimate concern. If they can't get the talent, then it's on them to show Ansah and Ulbrich that they can adapt and find a way to make it work with what they have.
Yeah, you're right. I think next year is a put up or shut up year for this type of defense. Saleh, like you said, in his first year in San Francisco, you know, was running a different defense than he is right now. He was running a lot more of the Seattle cover three type of defense that you saw at the Legion of Boom. And teams started to pick it apart, and you saw Saleh evolve as a defensive coach and evolve into this defense that is currently what the Jets are trying to implement. But again, it's year one. There's a talent deficiency. They've had a lot of injuries. They've had to keep it bland at times. So a second year of install, and like you said, an infusion of talent. I mean, I'm curious about Foley Fatukasi if they bring him back, just because he's not a perfect scheme fit. But he is a good player and he's a team captain. So it just kind of depends what he gets in the open market. But like you said, I was watching some of the San Francisco game, and look, they're not a perfect defense, especially since Saleh has left, but they run basically the same type of system that the Jets are running. And you can see what it's supposed to look like, because every time a player gets the ball, I mean, the entire defense swarms to the ball. I mean, they play as one unit. And especially when you have a dominant four-man pass rush that is getting in the quarterback's face within 3 seconds every time, hopefully sooner at times, it's like there's not much space to go because they drop so many guys back into coverage. There's a few holes in the zone, but if you hit those holes, everybody swarms. So you're not getting any yards after the catch. You're not getting any yards after contact. But this team, this defense, whether it's because of talent or injuries or whatever it is, they don't play as one unit. And they are bad at tackling. So it's just leading to a lot of big gains after the fact. But, you know, I see hope with this defense. The number one thing is, and even if the Jets have a solid defensive line and they've been hammered by injuries between Lawson and Huff and now I guess Quinnen, you need a dominant defensive line. So even if they have a good one and there are other position groups that are worse off than the defensive line, I think the Jets still keep investing here. Because I like Bryce Huff, but I don't think you rely on him as your starting edge rusher next year. I think you could put him in that D forward role as that other situational pass rusher. But I think they go, if they're in the position to draft a guy like Kayvon or Hutchinson or hell, even Karlaftis, I think they do it. I think they add another big pass rusher because that is where this defense starts. If you're getting pressure immediately with your front four, then everything looks a lot better because then the holes in your zone are not as big. And you know, especially you'd imagine that the back end could develop with more talent, maybe some more chemistry, that they can develop more of that swarming mentality. But it all starts up front with this defense. For me, the other thing is, and, you know, obviously Saleh is a loyal guy, but you have to hope that he doesn't fall into the trap that we've seen with pretty much every single Jets coach of recent memory. You saw with Rex, you saw with Todd Bowles, you saw with Adam Gase. You know, we're going to hire a close friend of mine. And obviously this guy's a friend of yours. Maybe your families are friends. You believe in him. And so you give him every benefit of the doubt. You keep granting him second chances. But at a certain point, and I think this point is next year, if the Jets defense is again, historically bad, if, like you said, for whatever reason, I'm sorry, but somebody's going to have to go. And, you know, maybe Saleh doesn't agree with that, but it's like, I think you got to fire Ulbrich. If this defense is as bad as it is right now, if they make some marginal improvements and they're 17th in the league or something, that's still not good, but then I could see Ulbrich coming back. But, you know, this defense can't continue to be awful and Ulbrich still be the defensive coordinator, especially since Saleh has claimed that he is more hands-off, that he is the CEO, he is the head coach, which means this is Jeff Ulbrich's defense. And if it's Jeff Ulbrich's defense, then he's got to pay the price. You can't just keep him around because you like him. But that's a problem the Jets will face. Hopefully not anytime soon. I think that's it. I think we can get out of here soon. Oh, I did want to touch on Booth LaFleur, who's been pretty impressive. I mean, how about that little hook and ladder? I thought they were getting all types of crazy today. What were your thoughts on the play calling of LaFleur, who really has, since going to the booth, just been calling games with an absolute different swagger?
Well, when I first saw that play, my first instinct was that it was improvised by Crowder and he just pulled that out thin air. But then when I saw the replay, I immediately figured out that it was drawn up and just, wow. I mean, let's, you know, try not to be results based here, because I feel like, you know, Crowder makes a bad throw, doesn't work out. Maybe we're killing the play instead.
Oh yeah. That's a running gag. I mean, that would be an awful play if that goes wrong in any shape or form. So,
but yeah, but I feel like I'd still praise the creativity, because even on the Keelan Cole pass that didn't work, I still like that concept. I think that had a high chance of working out, and it was just a really good defensive play. Not a great throw by Cole, which again, I guess maybe Crowder should have been throwing that pass, because he's just been pinpoint with every pass he's thrown in his career, which is why you're confident you could run that play that you did with him. And Crowder also made a great block after he threw that play. So threw the ball back to Berrios. So just the creativity has been off the charts with Michael Floor. It's gone well beyond like, oh, wow, we've coordinator who will hand off an end around now and then, or do one flea flicker every couple of weeks. It's gone from that to he might be number one in the league in terms of running plays that involve a lateral. And now end arounds are becoming a freaking part of the offense. Just he's been creative and it's worked. So I mean, again, I still give him credit for being creative, even if it wasn't working great, just because I like going outside the box, keeping the defense honest. But a lot of this stuff is working very well. So I really like the job that LaFleur has done this season, and he's turned it around. It's been a huge turnaround from the first few games in which most of us were pretty down on him and thought that he wasn't doing the best job of maximizing the talent that he had and putting Wilson in a position to succeed. But I think since he came out of the bye week, has done a much better job of adapting to these players, adapting to Zach Wilson. And he's been a plus so far. And I was talking about this with you recently, but I think if he continues on this path next year, as long as the Jets pump up their offensive numbers a little bit, I think he's going to be on the head coaching radar in 2023. So he's been impressive this year.
I think, yeah, I mean, it's a little soon to say that, especially considering how we've had little spurts of offensive genius and then they've kind of disappeared. But you're right, a lot of that seems more talent-based. This is certainly the most optimistic I've been about a Jets offensive scheme and probably ever, because it's like if you get some more talent on that side of the football and Zach Wilson can at least be competent, you've seen flashes of what this offense can do, and it would easily be the most fun Jets offense we've had. You're right. If they come out next year and they are a top 15 offense and the Jets are on the verge of a wild card, I could see his name floated around. He's got the last name. People love the young, bright offensive minds. So I could maybe see it, but I will say, I think the Booth stuff may actually be a factor, because you see the difference. And like you could blame it on just he was trying to install a system, maybe it's not a huge deal, but he clearly is more comfortable in the booth. So there is some worry about, okay, you make him a heck. We're so far ahead of ourselves here, but just to play to talk about the scenario you're talking about, there is some thought process that it's like, oh, you put him on the field as a head coach, he won't have the same effect. But I don't think he's even close. I think he has to have next year has to be a good year, and the year after that has to be a damn year. It has to be a great year. And then I could see him being a head coach. But I think he's going to be with Wilson for the majority of his rookie contract, and hopefully longer. But you're right. The trajectory that he's on over the last few weeks, where you're really seeing some of the creativity and some of the stuff that he's doing with this unit, plus his last name, plus he's a young offensive guy. Yeah, I could see his name float around. And hell, like, you know, Patrick Graham, the Giants defensive coordinator, was the Jets requested an interview with him last year, and this year he's awful and the Giants defense is terrible. So, you know, just because a guy gets floated around doesn't mean he's going to be a head coach. I think it's important to note that, but I think we've said it all, Michael. I think we've covered it. We've been a little slacking in the podcast, so we're going to do a mailbag this week, try to get back to the 2-week schedule. Expect that on Thursday. We're going to do that this time, Michael. Okay. We're going to record it on Wednesday. We'll put out a tweet for the mailbag. We'll do that on Thursday. Try to get back to that 2-week schedule. We appreciate everybody for listening. You can follow us at CYJPod on Twitter, Michael at Michael_Nanny, and myself at Ben W. Blessington. Go to jetsxfactor.com for the best Jets content. Find us on iTunes, YouTube, Spotify. I think that's it, Michael. Last words?
I plan on being alive for the rest of the season. I don't have any last words right now.
Okay. Yeah. Hilarious joke. Almost as funny as your Denzel Mims joke.
I was just thinking about that before you said, I was like, wait, does he say any last words? I gotta reference that somehow, because that's a pretty weird thing to add.
I say it at the end of every single podcast. It's like, it feels a little weird to just get out of here. Sometimes you have one more topic you want to bring up. Normally it's, you know, inconsequential. I mean, it's normally about the uniforms. I thought this was a good uniform matchup. But, you know, I don't know. You've taken advantage of it at times. You have nothing else to add? You've said it all?
I like the all aqua uniforms for Miami at home.
It's hard to look tough in those. It just has a I was watching some defense. I forget who it was, but there was a defensive lineman who was trying to celebrate after a big play, trying to flex. And it's like, I mean, you look like a giant Teletubby. It's just hard to, I think the all bright colors, it's just hard.
I mean,
it's
nothing like about their identities is intimidating. That's but true. I think it still looks good.
They are a dolphin. I mean, that is probably the least, I'm trying to think of the teams in the NFL. Is there a team less intimidating than Dolphins? Because at least the Jets, it's like, okay, you could be a fighter jet. You could put some machine guns and then bang. I mean, they're eliminating half the league.
Vikings, maybe?
No, Vikings are intimidating. What are you talking about?
I mean, the logo isn't that intimidating.
No, we're not talking about the logo. We're talking about the actual object of the team. I mean, a buffalo. Okay. You got a stampede of buffaloes, it could run you over. Vikings, I mean, they could pillage a whole village. I mean, Patriots.
Charger. What
that's
is
a lightning bolt. Lightning bolt. The lightning. They're like Zeus or something. You know, lightning. That's intimidating. There's something.
Cardinal.
Yeah, that's true. Cardinals aren't. I mean, maybe if you have
the logo is intimidating.
Okay, you get points on that. Yeah, I mean the Dolphins logo looks like an insurance agency or something. So it just doesn't. I'm trying to think. I mean, I think the Dolphins are the most like passive team name that I can think of in the entire NFL.
Yeah, that's definitely it.
I mean, I guess Browns. I know it's Paul Brown.
But still, they have like an old school feel that kind of.
Well, they also have like the ball. No, I don't think you're understanding what I'm saying. I'm literally saying I'm as simple minded as just the object of the team. I don't care about the logo or their identity.
So
I just
what is a Brown then?
Well, they have like a dog mascot. Well, I think it's after their owner or their old owner, Paul Brown. But they have a dog. So they're a dog, I guess, is we'll imagine him as, because you can't really imagine the color. So I think the Dolphins still win that. Okay, we'll get out of here. We don't have to go through all of them. But tweet us if you think of a team, you know, in all of professional sports that is less intimidating than a Dolphin.
White Sox, Red Sox.
Okay.
They're literally Sox.
Okay, if it's the NFL. Okay, out of NFL teams, you're right. Things can get a little wacky. All right. NFL teams, is there a least intimidating team or a less intimidating team than the Dolphins? I'm sorry. I just thought that was had to be said, but good uniform matchup. All right, we'll get out of here. We'll be back on Thursday with the mailbag. We'll put that tweet. Send us your questions if you're interested. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on Thursday.